Hey, it's Jen. Just a quick heads up before we start the show. The news is rapidly developing, and things may have changed by the time you hear this episode. For the latest news, tune into your public radio station and follow updates at npr.org. This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. Lawmakers passed the Biden administration's $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill. The final vote went entirely along party lines after over 24 hours of debate.
Today, I can say we've taken one more giant step forward in delivering on that promise, that help is on the way. I want to start off by thanking the Vice President, but I want to thank all of the senators who worked so hard to reach a compromise, to do the right thing for the American people during this crisis, and voted to pass the American Rescue Plan.
It's Biden's first major piece of legislation and his first big agenda win. It also put the Democrats' slim 50-49 Senate majority to the test. The legislation is now headed over to the House, and with the expiration for unemployment benefits looming, Democrats hope to get it to Biden's desk soon. The plan met changes along the way, so what's in it now? Here to discuss the sprawling American Rescue Plan are Leanne Caldwell, Capitol Hill correspondent for NBC News. Leanne, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Ben White, chief economic correspondent for Politico. Ben, welcome back.
Pleasure to be with you.
So, Leanne, give us a bit more detail.
Well, the Senate had a very long weekend, one that was expected, but it was stretched out because of a challenge, we shall say, in getting Senator Joe Manchin, a moderate Democrat from West Virginia, on board regarding a new proposal regarding unemployment insurance. So Democrats Friday morning announced a deal to extend unemployment insurance an additional month through the end of September, this federal benefit that was only supposed to be through August at an additional $400 per week for people receiving these jobless claims. Well, it looks like Senate Democratic leaders didn't have all of their ducks in order. Senator Joe Manchin wasn't necessarily on board. And so they spent hours all day Friday negotiating this proposal. And finally, they came out with a $300 a week extension instead of $400. And it would just be extended for an additional week, so until early September. So finally, after, you know, this 12-hour delay, they continued on with what is necessary in these big budget reconciliation bills, which is the process Senate Democrats moved this COVID relief bill, which is called a Votorama. So Senators voted all through the night, Friday night into Saturday morning, and then around noon on Saturday, they finally voted on this final piece of legislation on this $1.9 trillion COVID bill. You know, they were up all night, working all morning, but Democrats were thrilled that they were able to pass this bill very closely to how President Biden had envisioned it and had proposed it.
Ben, this is our third COVID relief package. In terms of stimulus bills, how big is this plan? Give us some context.
It is big. I mean, $2 trillion, Jennifer, is a large number on top of, I think we've done $4 trillion or so before that. So we're talking about a pretty big infusion of cash into the economic system. And these are, you know, $1,400 checks for individuals. And then, you know, for couples making up to $150,000, it starts to phase out after that, but also $1,400 checks for dependent children. So it'll be a fair amount of cash going to people's pockets. And obviously, the extension of unemployment benefits is big. There's a lot of other stuff in here that we can get to. Obviously, we'll get to the child tax credit expansion and the rest of it. You know, and there's some economic argument over whether you know, we're doing too much on this front, given all we've done before, and that the economy should be improving in 2021 as the vaccines start to take hold and the economy takes off. I think the Biden administration probably correctly ascertained and assumed that there's still people hurting who need this money, particularly the jobless benefits, and people who have lost jobs or lost income certainly need this money. Small businesses need this money. So it's big. It is one of the larger stimulus packages we've ever had, and taken in context with the rest of it, it's a lot of cash flooding into the system. But, you know, we're still so far away from where we were pre-COVID in terms of employment, in terms of incomes, particularly, you know, women in the workplace and how hard COVID hit them. And their thinking is, okay, there's a chance here that we're pumping maybe a little bit too much cash into the system. And I think Janet Yellen just spoke to this morning, the new Treasury Secretary, that sure, if there's some inflationary impact from this, we can deal with it. But the lesson from 2008, 2009, when the stimulus was a bit too small, is that the risks are much higher of doing not enough than they are of doing too much. And if for whatever reason there's too much, we can handle that. But there's a huge amount of need still here.
Leanne, who are the big winners in this bill?
Middle income and low income families and individuals. There's one thing that the two Senate leaders, Schumer and McConnell, agree on, that this was a massive progressive piece of legislation. In their speeches immediately after this passed, Senator Schumer said the bill will deliver more to help more people than anything the federal government has done in decades. Shortly after, Leader McConnell said this is the most progressive piece of legislation in a generation. And that is true. You know, I've been covering Congress for a long time, and so often these big, massive bills, so much of the need goes, or the relief goes, to businesses, higher income people, with the thought of it, you know, still Republicans, many Republicans anyway, believe in this trickle-down theory. And this is very targeted to families and individuals making $150,000 if you're a couple or less, $75,000 if you're an individual or less. And not just in these direct stimulus checks, there's so much more there. There's this expansion of the child tax credit, where families will get payments every single month for the next year, up to $300, depending on how many children you have. There's the expansion of the Affordable Care Act. People, families up to 400% of poverty, that's $100,000 or more, a little bit over $100,000 if you're a family of four, getting some more subsidies for the Affordable Care Act. There's child care assistance. There's the earned income tax credit expansion. There's, and if you're struggling and on government programs, there's an expansion of food aid and women, infant, children program, rental assistance. The list really does go on to help people who are struggling in this current economic environment because of this pandemic.
We got this message from Ma on Facebook, who says, I read that by changing the eligibility requirement and the cutoffs for stimulus checks, 17 million families will lose access to these payments. Is this true? If so, how do Democrats justify it when many campaigned on vote for us and you get $2,000? Leah, explain a little bit more about the cutoffs here and who loses access to these payments as a result.
Yeah, it is true. But there's a lot of Democrats who didn't want the income cap to be reduced. But this was one of the compromises that had to be made to get some of these moderate Democrats on board to ensure passage of this bill, especially in the Senate. So how it was originally proposed is, if you made $199,000, well, let me just start back with the first bill, where the first direct stimulus checks. If you made $199,000 or less, if you were a couple, you would receive a few hundred dollars in a direct stimulus check, because it would start to phase down after $150,000 for a couple. In the House version of this latest bill that passed, the phase out was actually more quickly than it was in the first COVID bill. So if you made $200,000, you would get $0, $199,000. Now what the senators did is they phase that out much quicker. And if you make $160,000 for a couple, $80,000 as an individual, $112,000 if you are head of household, that is when the cap cuts off. So these higher income people will not receive a stimulus check if you did last time. So if you make $161,000 as a couple, or excuse me, $161,000 as a couple, you will not get your stimulus check, even though last time you did get a stimulus check. And that was just the compromise that had to be made to make sure that all 50 Senate Democrats were on board and would pass this legislation.
I want to circle back to something. We got this tweet from Jennifer who says, when discussing the stimulus payments, no one ever mentions the cutoff for those filing head of household. This filing is what a lot of single parents use, including myself. Leanne, just say one more time what that cutoff is for people filing head of household.
That cutoff is $112,000 and I believe $500. So that is head of household. So, and remember, these stimulus checks also include dependents as well. It's $1,400, not only for the parents or head of household or the single adult, but also for dependents, children as well. But it is $112,000 for head of household for those single parents.
Ben, the restaurant industry got some help in this package. There's a $28.6 billion revitalization fund. Explain what that'll go to.
Yeah, I mean, the idea there is that, you know, restaurants have been hit particularly hard by COVID. A lot of them shut down, particularly the smaller ones that couldn't get access to PPP fund, the Small Business Rescue Fund. So that money is intended to really be targeted at, you know, smaller restaurants that really got hurt badly. And if either been shut down or partially shut down, they'll get some cash out of that. One of the hardest hit industries that needs the most help.
In a moment, we take some of your questions about the plan and what it could mean for you.
Support for 1A and the following message come from The Jab, a new podcast from The Economist. How well will COVID-19 vaccines work, and what do they mean for life going forward? What are vaccine passports, and will you need one? Find the answers in The Jab. Each week, The Economist science correspondent Alok Jha and their health policy editor Natasha Loader unpack a different theme and talk through the race between infections and injections. Subscribe and listen to The Jab for free today on Apple Podcasts, Acast, or your podcast app.
On NPR's Consider This podcast, we help you make sense of one big story in the news every day, like how to combat disinformation and conspiracy theories, which pose a real threat to democracy, and what life looks like after you're vaccinated, the next phase of do's and don'ts. All that in 15 minutes every weekday. Listen now to Consider This from NPR.
We're discussing President Biden's COVID relief bill. Ben, we've been getting lots of questions about the child allowance included in this bill. Walk us through how that works and who's eligible.
Right. So it does expand that a little bit. You've now got $1,400 checks for dependents, children, and I believe, and Leanne can correct me if I'm wrong, that the 17-year-old cutoff is now gone, and there are some provisions or a provision in here that allows for payments to dependents who are in college. Then it gets a little technical because I think if they're, you know, independent, the checks could go directly to them. But for the most part, if you have dependent children, you qualify for the full payments, you will get $1,400 additional directly to you, the taxpayer, rather than to the children for each dependent child. So that significantly adds to the total that you will get and makes it a little bit broader than was available in the previous stimulus packages, which were slightly more limited in terms of dependent children and the amounts that that could be distributed to them. But Leanne, if you do have more precise info on the college age kids, I know there are a lot of people interested in that. I just saw somebody tweeting that particular question, and you may have the specifics a little better than I do.
Leanne, go ahead.
I think he's right, but you put me on the spot here. But I think that is right. They did expand it to include dependents who are still in college.
And then there's also this monthly check for families per child. Explain that piece of it, Leanne.
As far as the child tax credit is concerned, what that is. It's expanded to about $3,000 a year per family. But what's different is people aren't going to get it at the end of the year in their tax bill. Instead, it's paid forward. So there will be a check every month for families And it will be slightly more if you're six, if you have kids that are six and under, at $250 or $300 a month. And if kids from over 6 to 17 will be $250 a month. And so Democrats have really wanted that kind of pay it forward ability for them, people to get this tax credit, knowing that a monthly check is going to be much more beneficial to people rather than having to wait until the end of the year. And so to get that relief. And this is something that Democrats hope becomes permanent. It's only a year-long program, but people do know that once things like this are in the system, it's really hard to let them go away. And so they are hoping that this is going to be the beginning of a permanent payable prepaid child tax credit.
Well, Ben, you mentioned some of the criticism from Republicans with this plan, that it's more money than the economy needs right now, or that it could cause inflation. But here's a question Mike had. He's in Illinois.
Heard a lot about items that do certainly seem to be related to the problems caused by the COVID pandemic. Not too much about the items that the Republicans are saying have nothing to do with COVID, and I'd like to hear more about that. For example, I've heard that there's significant amount of money in the bill for a multi-employer pension plan bailout, which doesn't seem to have anything to do with COVID. Sounds like a long-standing problem. So I'd like to hear more about those items.
We also got this tweet from Jeff who says, can you go into claims that only 9% of the bill actually goes to COVID-19 relief? Ben?
Well, that's a big stretch to use that 9% figure. I mean, that's probably referring to, you know, direct payments for expanded, you know, vaccine distribution and testing and state and local, you know, aid directly for testing. But, you know, you have to think more broadly about the impact of COVID-19 and what this bill attempts to do. It does have enormous amounts of funds directly targeted at, you know, fighting the virus and helping states and local governments deal with testing and vaccination as we need to do. But the impact of it was much broader on the economy. We lost 20 million plus jobs. We've only got half of them back. We took a huge toll on women in the workforce here, among women who decided to stay home and help with Zoom schooling and gave up on their careers, at least for the time being, and incomes went down. So, you know, there's a big chunk of this bill that is not directly related to COVID-19 itself, but on the economic impact of it, which is lost jobs, lost wages, unemployment. That money, technically, you could argue, is not COVID-related, but is COVID impact-related, hence the stimulus checks to people to, you know, get the economy going again, to give them the money that they need to cover bills. And then when we are, you know, through the COVID period, to get out there and spend money in this economy. We're a 70% consumer-driven economy. People need to have money in their pockets to spend to help local businesses get started again. So that could be technically correct, the 9% figure, but it misses the much larger economic impact of this, which was massive, the biggest full stop in the economy that we've ever seen, and the biggest job loss in a short period of time that we've ever seen. And we have made some improvements. I mean, the jobs numbers are decent, and they're starting to get us a little bit back to where we need to be. But, you know, if you look at the real unemployment rate that the White House has talked about, you include all the people who left the workforce, particularly women during COVID-19, it's probably closer to 9 or 10%. That is a massive number, and that's a lot of suffering. So there needs to be, you know, a lot of this support into the economy. As for the unrelated provisions, I don't know what he's talking about on the pension bailout. I don't believe it's in there, but I couldn't swear to it, since, you know, I haven't read every single jot and title of the thing, but I haven't heard much talk of that. And, you know, you could argue that the expanded child tax credit is not directly related to COVID and is a, you know, Democratic priority that they've been after for a while. But the idea there, too, is to help struggling families who have kids and have lost income during COVID and, you know, need the help and need the child care. Same thing with Obamacare expansion. So I don't think it's fair to say this is unrelated to COVID.
Leanne, anything to add there?
The only thing I'll add is, as far as the pension component, there is a pension component in this bill. I'm actually surprised that Republicans did not make a bigger issue out of this. We all We know that Democrats have been trying to include pension fixes in various funding legislation for some time now and haven't been able to do it. But there is quite a bit of relief for an aid for some of the pensions. I think it totals about $30 billion to help some of these struggling pension programs.
And is this because we know some states have had pretty dire pension issues for the past several years? And are these issues that were just exacerbated during the pandemic?
That's what Democrats would say and why they would add it to this COVID bill, because it is everyone's economic. So many people have had economic impact from COVID and the pandemic. And they also knew that this was a place that they would be able to get it passed as well. This has been a Democratic priority for quite some time. Speaker Pelosi has been talking about the pension issue since the first COVID bill, and they were able to get it done in this bill.
Leanne, how much of the bill is going directly to COVID-related items like testing and vaccines?
So there is, as far as that specifically is concerned, there's $14 billion for vaccine distribution. There's tens of other bills. There's, I believe, $10 billion, if I'm remembering correctly, for more testing. So as far as the healthcare component of the bill, there are tens of billions of dollars going directly to the testing, research, vaccine distribution, which is a huge one. And so if that is what people are talking about specifically about COVID-related things, there's that component of the bill, which is absolutely in there. But Democrats have been very clear that this is not just a, trying to get the virus under control bill. This is an economic, what they're calling relief or rescue package. And so their definition and their goals with this bill were much, much broader than just trying to combat the virus.
Ben, you mentioned another critique of the plan, and that's that it could cause inflation. Is that a possibility? And if so, how would that work?
It is a possibility. And I think, you know, the Biden administration is aware of it. The Fed is aware of it. Treasury is aware of it. You've seen, and I won't get too wonky or technical on the bond markets with you, but you've seen interest rates on the 10-year bond spike a little bit lately. And the fear is just that we're pouring a huge amount of gas into an economy that's probably going to heat up a little bit anyway, which traditionally tends to lead to inflation. And that happens because people have a lot of money in their pockets to spend. There's not that much supply. COVID really hurt supply chains, you know, across industries. So you have a lot of dollars chasing, you know, fewer things that are available, and then prices rise. And when prices rise, that's inflationary, and all the money you have buys less. There is a risk of that happening, but you have to put it in context, historical context. We are still at incredibly low interest rates. Yield on the 10-year is still remarkably low, 1.6 or whatever it is. I mean, if people remember the 70s and 80s, we're at 14%, way higher than this. So yes, we could get a little inflationary pressure in the economy. I think, you know, if when COVID ends and you want to buy an airline ticket or book a, you know, resort stay or any of these things that a lot of us, you know, we're chomping at the bit to do, they might be more expensive because there'll be less properties or less flights available and more people chasing them. But the whole idea is that this will be temporary, that we'll get a little bit of a price spike based off of this and the economy reopening. But then as, you know, all the hotels and bars and restaurants reopen and flights are all back, the prices will, you know, recalibrate to a more reasonable level and we won't get scary inflation. And if for whatever reason, for, you know, a month or two or three or four, we do, the Fed can, you know, nudge up interest rates by a quarter point or whatever it needs to do. So I'm sympathetic to the idea that there is, you know, an inflationary potential scare out there. But I think the ultimate analysis is, you know, we need the help. We need the money. People need the assistance. And we're nowhere near the kind of inflation that we saw, you know, with gas lines in the 70s and interest rates at 15%. So people should probably not freak out about it.
Pat emails, folks talk about these funds as though it's some type of gift. These funds came from the taxpayers. They're getting their money back. Here's another question we got from Scott in Colorado.
Since we're in the middle of the new tax season, and people can file taxes already, but taxes aren't due until April 15th, I am wondering if the stimulus checks are based on the 2019 tax year, as in head of household or joint income or single income, or whether or not if you filed already, it would now count the 2020 tax season.
Ben, can you give us any clarity on that?
Sure. And I'll say this, that the IRS, as soon as this thing is signed by President Biden, will issue more clear guidelines on exactly what they're basing the checks on. But the answer, short answer, is they'll be based on whatever you have filed most recently. So if you haven't filed 2020 yet, you don't have to worry about it. They will base your stimulus checks on 2019 that's already in the system. If you think, though, and this is important for that caller and anybody else who's listening, if you lost a job in 2019, lost income, think that you are eligible for more stimulus payments based on your 2020 income tax return, you should file that. Now, you shouldn't file it too rapidly that you mess it up, like make sure it's right and you get all the data right and do it the right way. But if you were, not eligible or less eligible in 2019, think you're more eligible in 2020, go ahead and get that done, and the IRS will base your payment off of that. So you're going to get it either way. As long as you filed 2019, they'll base it off that. If you think you're in a better position, well, not better position, but a position to get more federal help based on your 2020 situation, you should file that one.
Well,
but either way, you're going to get it.
Brass asks on Twitter, what about people who already filed taxes for 2020 with unemployment money taxed? Will they have to amend or will the IRS adjust? And will states follow this policy?
Yeah, this is a very good question that gets into the weeds of what the IRS will release as soon as this is passed. They should put out, detailed fact check an information, a white paper saying exactly answers to these questions. And there are provisions in the new stimulus package that make a certain amount of the new unemployment benefits not subject to tax up to a certain level. So that will matter to people. But I would, and Leanne maybe knows more about this than I do, but I would say, as soon as the House passes this, which I think will be, today, tomorrow, whenever it is, and Biden signs it, the IRS will distribute pretty clear information on eligibility, which tax year they'll be looking at, and exactly how your unemployment benefits will be impacted. So I would keep a sharp eye out for that.
Erica asks this on Twitter. My son was born in January, so he had not been filed as a dependent on our taxes. Does he qualify for the $1,400 payment? Leanne, is that clear yet?
So that's a specific, I'm not sure specifically about that, but I did go back and check to see what dependents are eligible for the stimulus payment. And it specifies in the sense that anyone who is a dependent based on the Social Security number on the family income. So it doesn't have to be a child. So it can be if there is a parent, like an elderly person living in a household and who is considered a dependent of the head of households, that person would also qualify for getting that stimulus check as well. So it's no longer seems to be an age cutoff. It's more just how you file your taxes and how your dependents are. But for someone who was born a child who was born in January, I would assume that the IRS would take that into consideration. And that gets to what Ben was saying about how you can go back and refile or make an amendment and an addendum to the IRS.
In a moment, we'll look at the Obamacare expansion that was quietly added in the COVID relief bill. That's just ahead.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Hint. Fruit-infused water with no calories or sweeteners. Hint water comes in over 25 flavors. The watermelon water actually tastes like watermelon. The blackberry water tastes like blackberries. Hint is water with a touch of true fruit flavor. You can get Hint water at stores, or you can have it delivered directly to your door. When you buy two cases, you'll get a third case free and free shipping. Visit drinkhint.com and use promo code NPR at checkout.
Neuroscientist Kimberly Noble wants to know, if a family gets more money,
does it directly impact children's cognitive development?
Ideas about the brain. That's on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Now let's get back to our conversation about the COVID relief package that was just passed in the Senate. The bill also includes a temporary expansion to the Affordable Care Act. Here to tell us what that means is Bob Leshefsky, president of Health Policy and Strategy Associates. That's a Washington, D.C. health policy firm. Bob, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
So give us a rundown of this expansion. Exactly what will it do?
Well, it'll increase substantially what Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act offers people who buy their insurance through the program. So these are people who are in the individual health insurance market and get their insurance through what we've traditionally thought of as Obamacare. When the bill was passed, originally 10 years ago, the Affordable Care Act did a great deal to subsidize people who had low incomes by expanding Medicaid to people with very low incomes, by expanding and offering insurance subsidies for people to buy individual health insurance in the individual market, particularly people with modest incomes. But the bill fell short in terms of helping truly middle-class people. People who did not qualify for subsidies these past few years often saw health insurance premiums in the $15,000 to $20,000 a year range with substantial deductibles. And the cutoff was people making 400% of the federal poverty level. Above that, you didn't get a subsidy. Below that, you did. What that means in plain terms is that an individual making over $51,000 in 2021 would not get any subsidies. A family of four making over $106,000 a year would not get any subsidies. But a family making $106,000 a year, well, that sounds like a lot of money. Fell off the cliff in terms of not being able to get subsidy, and they might be facing premiums of $15,000 to $20,000 plus very high deductibles on top of that. When candidate Biden ran for president, he said he wanted to bolster or fix Obamacare. Some other candidates wanted to move to a single-payer Canadian-style system, such as Bernie Sanders, but Biden said, I want to fix it and improve it, fix the gaps that we've got. And he proposed in his campaign to take the cap off of subsidies. No longer would people over 400% of the federal poverty level be capped on subsidy. What the federal stimulus bill does now is it takes some of these important proposals by Biden and it puts them into the stimulus bill and improves substantially subsidies. Now, the catch is it only does it for 2 years, during 2020 and 2021. Which leaves a heck of a sort of political time bomb sitting there for Republicans at the end of 2022.
But that makes me wonder why Republicans didn't push back on this more.
Well, there were so many things for them to push back on that they were concerned about. And so I don't think they did an effective job of getting their message out there. The stimulus bill does lots of things for lots of people. It's $1.9 trillion. And some of it goes beyond the immediacy of the pandemic. And this is just one of the things. So I think it sort of all got lost in the noise. But this is a very, very important change to the Affordable Care Act.
So if I'm sort of on that bubble that you described, what does this mean for me and my family if we want to enroll in the Affordable Care Act? What are the new rules for at least the next 2 years? What changes?
Well, what I would do is if I were in the individual health insurance market and I were a person or a family that was not getting subsidies, I would in the next few weeks go back to the Affordable Care Act website, either your state website or the federal website, healthcare.gov, and I would look to see what support you're going to get. Because if you're an individual making more than $50,000, which was not getting any support, and you're a family, again, a family of four making over $106,000, and you were not getting support, the likelihood is fairly substantial that you're going to get some substantial help here. Now, this does phase out. What the Biden campaign proposal proposed and what the stimulus bill does is it caps your insurance premiums at 8.5% of your income. So if you're making $100,000 a year, you will not pay more than $8,500 toward health insurance. Now that's very meaningful because again, people with no subsidies can be paying $15,000 to $20,000. Mm. So if you're making $200,000, you're not going to pay more than $16,000 toward health insurance. So it really helps, the sweet spot is it really helps families with incomes between $100,000 and $175,000, that sort of thing. But I would not, you know, take the general rule there. I would go back to the Obamacare Affordable Health Care website, and I would see how this changes for you.
What is the likelihood that Democrats will try to make these changes permanent? Is that even possible?
Well, I think that's the interesting political thing here, because this is going to sunset or go away at the end of 2022. We would go back to the old subsidies and we'd have the same old problem of middle class people really being hurt by Obamacare premiums. Now, so this is where it gets interesting, because what happens at the end of 2022? We have an election in November 2022, and clearly what's going to be at the top of domestic policy debate in that election is, what are we going to do about the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare subsidies? Are we going to let them sunset, or are we going to extend them? Now, the people who most benefit from this are true middle-class people, the kinds of people who make $150,000 a year and buy their health insurance on the individual market, not through an employer, are very often self-employed people. And self-employed people very often are part of the Republican base or part of the Trump base. So what the Democrats have done here is they've dramatically improved health insurance costs for self-employed people or anybody else in the individual health system who doesn't get employer-based insurance. But they've done it only until the end of 2022. So we come to the election, and Republicans are really going to be on the spot here. Are they going to let these subsidies change for people who are very often in their base? Or are they going to work with Democrats to extend the Obamacare subsidies? And, of course, Republicans have done everything they can over the year to repeal Obamacare. They've campaigned against Obamacare. And in great part because people in their base were hurt by Obamacare. Obamacare did a wonderful job for low-income people because of the Medicaid expansion and lower-income people because of the subsidies. But Obamacare did a really bad job for truly middle-class people, people generally self-employed, who had higher incomes because their health insurance costs and deductibles exploded. Well, the Biden campaign promise and what's been done in the stimulus bill now goes a long way to reversing those problems.
So we'll have to wait until 2022 and see. That's Bob Leshefsky. He's president of Health Policy and Strategy Associates. That's a Washington, D.C. health policy firm. Bob, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Let's continue taking your questions about the COVID relief bill with Leanne Caldwell, Capitol Hill correspondent for NBC News, and Ben White, chief economic correspondent for Politico. We got this email from Carrie who asks, what do people have to do to receive these various payments, especially if you generally don't file taxes? Ben?
Well, if you don't file taxes, you'll have a little bit of a problem, as the IRS does base the payments on the tax information they have available to them. You generally don't have to do much of anything if you are a taxpayer and have filed your 2019 taxes. They'll have that information available. They can assess what benefit you're available to get, and they will either make a direct deposit to you if you have that arrangement already set up with the IRS where they have your direct deposit information. If they don't, they'll send you a paper check, so you don't need to do anything. Same thing if you've already filed 2020, they'll base it on 2020, as we talked about before. If you do not file taxes at all, I don't have an answer for that and don't believe that you would get a payment unless you made some special arrangement. But if you are, you know, part of a household where there's somebody else filing as head of household, then that person who has filed the taxes will receive the stimulus payment, and presumably you would share it with that person. But you don't have to do much of anything. If you filed your 2019 taxes or your 2020 taxes, the IRS will find you and they will direct deposit your check if you have that arrangement, which hopefully you do, and most people should. If not, they will send you a paper check.
I want to quickly move through a couple of quick questions. Randy asks on Twitter, is this the budget reconciliation bill? If so, is there a fuss? Why is there a fuss about all the provisions that have been passed when Congress couldn't pass anything in the normal process? Leanne, briefly?
This is the budget reconciliation bill, and Congress is also going to have another attempt at budget reconciliation for other Democratic priorities later this year. But there's very strict rules on what can pass in the budget reconciliation in the Senate. It has to be budget related, not necessarily just a strict policy related. That's why the minimum wage had to be stripped out, not for political reasons, but because of the arcane Senate rules.
Phil writes on Facebook, how large is the national debt and how large can it be before we start putting America's financial situation at risk? Where's the limit? Ben?
Yeah, good question. Around $22 trillion. It may be higher than that now. It certainly went up a great deal during the Trump administration with the corporate tax cuts that never wound up paying for themselves at all. So we added to the debt and deficit that way. Nobody knows the answer to the exact point at which it becomes problematic for a nation's economy. It's certainly not now. You see, our interest rates are quite low. People are still willing to buy our debt. We're not in a debt crisis. We have, an enormous economy, but we are now at the point where annually we are creating deficits larger than the size of our economy, and there is a reckoning out there at some point if we don't reckon a little bit with the size of our deficits and our debt. And hopefully we do that through faster economic growth helped by the stimulus bill and a healing economy and the end of COVID-19, and we get a little bit more fiscal discipline in there. But the argument for, budget austerity and slashing spending and all of that doesn't make a whole lot of sense right now when people are suffering, and we're just not there. We have big debt, big time. $22 trillion is a lot. Eventually, we need to deal with it. It's not a crisis at the moment.
We got this tweet from Kokomo Kid who says, is there any chance of repealing the 2017 tax cuts for the rich to help pay for this bill and reduce the deficit? Really quickly, Ben?
No, not really. There's not votes for it. Democrats are not really in favor of raising taxes right now. You would need some Democratic support in the Senate to do it. Not going to happen in the short term.
Leanne, politically, what does this bill mean for Biden and the Democrats? As we said, it passed purely along party lines. What does this mean?
Democrats think that this is fantastic politically for Biden and for Democrats. People are going to see a lot of relief. They really hope that this bill jumpstarts the economy, as Ben referenced earlier. In the 2008 recession, it was a sluggish economy in the aftermath because many people thought that the stimulus were not big enough. So they hope that this is a big, big boon to Democrats. But Democrats have a big, long agenda, and it's only going to get more difficult from here. This was the easy part.
We got this message from Denise who says, I would love to be able to easily decline getting a check instead of having to mail it back. Is that possible? I've been fortunate to keep my job this past year and don't need this money. Leanne, what do we know about that?
I don't know much about that. I think that what the government would probably say is take the check and spend it and stimulate the economy. That's the purpose of them is to stimulate the economy and, eventually create more jobs because of the more stimulation and increase of the economy. There's a reason the Democrats and the government and previous stimulus checks, Congress did not make these checks just for the unemployed. They wanted people to get some more relief, use this money, give them some spending power, and that's the reason for it.
So what exactly happens next with this bill? It passed the Senate, it's back in the House. Do you expect any other hurdles before this bill makes it to President Biden's desk?
I don't think so. The Congressional Progressive Caucus, who we are watching closely, including Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who was not happy with some of the changes made regarding unemployment insurance, the Progressive Caucus seems to be on board. They call this a truly progressive and bold package, and they call the concessions just minor. We do expect it to pass. Speaker Pelosi can't lose more than 4 Democrats. And once it does pass, it should go to the president's desk relatively quickly, just a day or two after that. And one more thing, the House should pass it, is expected to pass it as early as tomorrow.
That's Leanne Caldwell, Capitol Hill correspondent for NBC News. Also with us, Ben White, chief economic correspondent for Politico. Leanne, Ben, thanks for coming on the show today. Today's producer was Michelle Harvin. Our podcast is produced by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk more soon. This is 1A.